Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Compliance Clarified, a podcast for financial services regulatory professionals from Regulatory Intelligence. I'm your host, Alexander Robson, Managing Editor in London, and today we are discussing the upcoming US presidential election on Tuesday, November the 5th. Joining me today from New York are Henry Engler, Senior Editor, and Todd Errett, Senior Regulatory Intelligence Expert. Good morning to you both.
It's Alex. Good morning.
Thank you, Alex.
Morning. Right. So, former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris are locked in a very tight battle in the race for the White House, with the outcome predicted as too close to call and well within the margin of error for the pollsters. But regardless of who wins, the question for listeners to this podcast is what the outcome will be for any reforms to financial regulation. I think particularly we'd like to talk about banking and crypto today. But I'd like to open the discussion with a broad question about the polls and talk more widely about what both Trump and Harris have said on the campaign trail in recent weeks and months. Todd, if I might start with you, please. How are the polls currently shaping up, and will they be accurate?
That's a great question, Alex. I think it's a general consensus that the polls have basically been too close to call within the margin of error since kind of the beginning of the race. They've shifted a little bit for a while. Harris was seen as a slight favorite. And in recent weeks, it looks like maybe Trump has a little bit of momentum. I'm highly skeptical of all the polls. I think that, you know, the last two election cycles, they've basically just gotten it wrong. I don't know if there's demographic changes or what it is. People don't answer polls anymore or what it is. So I think it's probably going to be a very, very close race, as most people expect, and could go either way. As for, you know, policy, you know, there's been, I think, a lack of policy specific to financial services. Seems like the two biggest, campaign themes or subjects or top of mind concerns for the voting public are, you know, immigration and, you know, the economy, and or inflation. But there really hasn't been meaningful substantive dialogue or discussions about, call it banking, financial services, you know, regulatory policy. Crypto, on the other hand, has been interesting, where Trump earlier this summer attended a conference, the Bitcoin conference in Nashville, where he was, you know, all in on Bitcoin, to put it mildly.
That's a slight change, isn't it? He wasn't quite as enthusiastic a while ago.
Correct. And I think he attempted to shift that narrative, saying he didn't like a competing product to the dollar, but he's now all in on Bitcoin. And I think the most notable comment out of that conference was he promised to stockpile a reserve of Bitcoin, and he also promised to fire Gary Gensler on day one, which technically I don't believe he has the power or the authority to fire Gensler. I think it's traditional that, you know, the chairman of the SEC does normally step down in situations where there is a change of power. I think technically he could demote him to a lesser commissioner role and elevate one of the other commissioners to chairman. These are all kind of gray legal arguments. Whether or not Gensler would do that or go for that is a whole other debate. Interestingly, Kamala Harris has attempted to somewhat distance herself from the Biden, Gensler, Elizabeth Warren anti-crypto stance, and has warmed a little bit to the crypto community. However, hasn't really said much other than, you know, kind of an initial comment that, you know, AI, tech, and blockchain were all important for important future technological developments, you know, for America. The one thing that is interesting that was reported a couple of days ago by the news outlet and podcast outlet called Unchained, which is a pretty reputable crypto news outlet, they reported that Harris and her transition team have already begun vetting new SEC chair people, chairperson. And the two names that were floated were Chris Brummer from Georgetown Law and Erica Williams, who's the current chair of the PCAOB, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. Both of them would be viewed as, let's say, less anti-crypto or more slightly neutral to favorable for the crypto industry. Brummer has been particularly, you know, kind of pro-crypto or, you know, at least more warm to the industry than some of the others. I think it's a little early to be talking about transition teams, but I found it amusing and interesting. And, you know, those two names, I think, would probably be welcome replacements for Gensler if and when that all unfolded.
Henry, just anything to add on specifically? We were just opening the discussion on the polls. You know, anything else to add to what Todd said before we broadened the discussion more widely?
Really, I mean, I agree with Todd's description. I mean, it looks like a dead heat. Who knows what the outcome is going to be? As Todd suggests, in the past, the polls have been wrong. So I just think it's, as all of the political pundits put it, it everything hinges on the so-called battleground states, who can win in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those states, if in the early results, if either one of the candidates wins those states, then they're likely to carry the day. And the looks like the polling in those states reflect the national numbers. It's very close in each of these critical states. So we will see.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we've been looking at is the predictive betting markets, such as Predictit, Polymarket, and Kalshi. Are these markets liquid and accurate? And how do they work and how are they regulated? Todd?
That's a great question, Alex. Interestingly, the predictive betting markets, and there are, the three largest, they're all slightly moving in the direction of Trump. They have tracked the polling to a certain degree, where for quite a while, you know, Harris was ahead, and then it was a dead heat, and now they're a couple of them are now really pointing to Trump winning. It raises the question: is how accurate are these markets? And I think you need to look at the three different markets. Predictit is the oldest, and essentially it is not regulated. It's run as a nonprofit by a university. It operates under a no action letter from the CFTC because they basically deemed it we're a nonprofit. This is a kind of an academic experiment or an academic exercise. They put a limit on the amount of money anybody can wager. Call it, I think it's $850. So you're not going to have a so-called whale come in and really, you know, be able to skew the market one direction or the other in favor of a candidate or not just by throwing money around. The second market and the deepest from a liquidity perspective is Polymarket, and Polymarket is trading real volumes. I think they said $2 billion have been wagered so far this election cycle. Although $2 billion is a lot of money, from the greater scheme of things in financial markets, it's not a lot of money. Interestingly, Polymarket is not registered with the CFTC. They were actually fined by the CFTC in 2022 for operating an unregistered exchange. As part of their settlement, they paid $1.5 million fine and moved it completely offshore and put safeguards in place so that there are no U.S. traders or U.S. Purchasers or customers on that market. So it's considered to be an international market betting place. It runs on the Ethereum blockchain and is a new technology. And I think people are talking about it a lot because obviously it's the biggest. The third is a whole nother interesting story. It's called Kalshi. Kalshi actually sued the CFTC when the CFTC denied their application earlier this summer. They challenged it in court and won and got it overturned in court and actually launched, I think the court ruling was late August, and they launched in late September or early October. Kalshi is actively trading. There's several million dollars that have traded. Interestingly, the question there became, well, is it accurate and can it be influenced by whales? The interesting statistic, and critics said when Kalshi started moving towards Trump, a lot of people questioned, well, is it being manipulated or things like that? Kalshi actually published the data behind all the activity. And they said the median bet size for Harris had been $85. The median bet size for Trump had been $58. So we're talking small-time gamblers here, basically. But it definitely has moved to there are more bets for Trump than there are for Harris. And right now the odds are like 56-44. So, they're not dramatically off from, let's say, what the polls are saying. If the polls are 51-49 or, within a margin of error, I think they're relatively, whether it's causation or correlation is another, a whole other story, but they seem to be somewhat accurately representing, what's going on. Interestingly, Kalshi is, because it is a U.S. CFTC registered DCM or designated contract market, they only accept U.S. customers. So you get a different picture between these different, all three platforms.
From the war in Gaza.
There are a huge network of tunnels underneath. It looks like a spider web.
To the front lines in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
No matter where the story is, Reuters World News Podcast is there. We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes, every weekday. I'm your host, Kim Vanell. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Perhaps we'll move the discussion on to the key policy differences between the candidates, particularly banking, financial services, digital assets. Henry, do you want to start here?
I think, as Todd indicated at the outset, there hasn't been a lot of detail about financial regulation and what the candidates would do if they come into office. I think, in general terms, Trump is seen as the more business-friendly, hands-off, more deregulatory candidate than Harris. I think expectations are that Harris would likely continue the approach of the Biden administration in terms of financial regulation. So in a broad sense, I think that's sort of the way Wall Street is looking at the two candidates. Under Trump, I think there would be certainly an effort to, I've heard the term, defang the SEC, because the view is that, under Gensler, that agency has been very aggressive putting forward lots of policies that the more sort of pro-business, free market types do not like. But on the banking side, that's where things get a little bit tricky because of the current makeup of, say, the three top regulators, the Fed, the OCC, and the FDIC. Trump, for example, with the Fed, Trump in the past expressed his unhappiness with the chair, Jay Powell. At one point, I think he threatened to fire him if he came into office. But then since then, he's backed off that, and I think he really can anyway, legally, without cause. Jay Powell's term expires in 2026. And I would imagine, and I've heard some of Trump's closest economic advisors suggest that they feel that Powell has done a, you know, pretty good job. And indeed, I mean, the Fed has steered this economy away from avoiding a recession, which was widely predicted by many economists just a couple of years ago. And so I would imagine that if Trump came into office, he probably should be grateful to have Jay Powell in a leadership role at the Fed. The other agencies, I think there will be change. At the OCC, Michael Hsu is currently the acting head of the Comptroller of the Currency, and could well imagine that he would be replaced by someone to Trump's, you know, liking, more Republican, probably, you know, again, less intrusive sort of regulator. Although I think many people feel Hsu has done a very good job as well. But the interesting thing about putting someone else in Sue's shoes is that if that person also sits on the FDIC board. So currently the FDIC board, there are five board members, three of whom are Democrats. It's Grunberg, it's Michael Hsu, and also the chair of the CFPB, Rohit Chopra. So you have the three Democrats. So if Hsu's replaced by a Republican, then the makeup of the FDIC board becomes Republican led. And so that could complicate policy going forward to the extent that the FDIC has to cooperate, you know, with the OCC and the Fed on any big initiatives, such as the Basel III endgame, which in itself has become very contentious. So I suspect that that's kind of, you know, where we could see some changes that could simply by replacing the head of the OCC, you could shift the dynamics of banking regulation away from the path that it's been on so far. And that probably would be welcome to many on Wall Street.
Yeah, there has been a lot of hostility to the Fed's work, particularly under its vice chair for supervision, Michael Barr, hasn't there?
Yes, yes. And so Michael Barr is, he has gotten off to a tough start since he took that post, primarily because of the Basel endgame. He also faced the sort of mini regional banking crisis, with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, and that raised all kinds of supervision issues, which need to be addressed. Again, with Michael Barr, if Trump were to come into office, he could not fire Barr without cause, as far as I understand it legally. But again, if the makeup of the other agencies change, then it makes Barr's job that much more difficult to get certain types of rulemaking through. And I mean, it is already difficult given the pushback from the industry on issues like Basel. So I think that he would simply face a much more difficult path in terms of what from a Fed perspective, they would like to see happen on banking regulation in a Trump regime.
And beyond the presidential race, what are the other important contests? And why would they be important from a financial regulatory perspective? Todd, perhaps I could ask, aim that one at you.
I think that's the perfect segue from what Henry was just discussing, in that no matter what happens, let's say in the hypothetical that if Trump wins and wants to replace some of these people, whether it's Michael Barr, Michael Hsu, or what have you, he will need to get them confirmed via the Senate. So it makes these other races very important. You know, the races in the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate are really critical. In the event that if Trump were to win and the Republicans do not have control of the Senate, that's kind of a nightmare scenario where the Democrats would be able to basically block any Trump appointments that they don't like. It will be a very interesting dynamic how that all unfolds. I think, although it's been very customary in the past that, you know, the chair people of these various agencies just automatically default to leave when their party, you know, loses power. So I wouldn't expect, you know, that to be a problem with people wanting to hold over or stick around. Frankly, their life is just too miserable, you know, to stay in their roles. And it is a break from the norm. But whether or not he or even Kamala Harris, she might have a very difficult time if she wins. And let's say the Republicans gain control of the Senate, the Republicans might nix all of her appointees and shoot them down. She would have to shift to find people that, you know, the Republicans could swallow. If that were to unfold, you could have a situation where you end up with people in acting roles, and you would potentially have, you know, holdovers from the Biden administration, just because they can't get new people put in place. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics that could unfold, you know, under the various scenarios. And really, the Senate is very important. It plays a very important role in this dynamic.
Well, not that long to wait, hopefully. But finally, and this is, you know, perhaps a little outside our turf, but it seems worth mentioning Lina Khan, the head of the FTC, who's come under a huge amount of fire from a number of industries, including Wall Street, for her approach to antitrust policies. And some believe she would be gone under Trump. Others aren't so sure. And it's also, you know, unclear if she'd stay under any Harris presidency. But again, do either of you have any thoughts on how this might have an impact on regulatory professionals in the financial services industry?
As you say, Alex, she's become sort of a villain for many big business types. And it is unclear. I mean, I think certainly under Trump, she would more than likely be gone. But I saw some comments from J.D. Vance, Trump's running mate, the other day, where he suggested that he could see her perhaps remaining in the role because he thought that she provided an interesting, you know, perspective on big business, and maybe, you know, some businesses have grown too large. The tech industry, for example, there's a lot of focus on companies like Google. And Vance also mentioned the potential role for Elon Musk in some form or other. And the way he put it was that Musk and Khan could be like on opposite sides of the debate, so to speak, and that debate would be useful to have in a Trump administration. I don't exactly understand that. Elon Musk playing. I mean, Trump has talked about Elon Musk doing some sort of financial audit on the government, the entire government, should he win. So there's, you know, on the Republican side, it gets a bit creative, I think, in terms of what Khan may or may not do or survive. I think even on the Democratic side, because Khan has come under such fire, it might be difficult for Harris also to keep her in place, even though she may share that's the same philosophy that certain parts of the economy, certain business sectors have grown so large that there's that they've accumulated sort of quasi monopoly power, which is a detriment to consumers. At least that's what the argument would be.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Todd. As a former compliance officer, any other final thoughts on that?
I wouldn't disagree with anything Henry said on the Lina Khan situation. It would be interesting to see. I think the concept of putting Elon Musk and Lina Khan in a gladiator ring and let them duke it out or something sounds a little absurd. But I know there have been all these this talk of Elon Musk going to come in and audit the entire government and fix what's broken everywhere, because that's what he does, is he builds and fixes things. I think that's a little crazy too. I think there's too many conflicts of interest. I mean, with his SpaceX and things, he's got so many things going on. I just can't imagine what role in the government he would really want. And I think the more interesting question of all of, call it the peripheral players or from a policy perspective, is what will RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., do? Obviously, Trump has promised him some role at some point for his support. Will it be health? Will it be potentially, I mean, it'd be interesting to put him in the CIA or NSA or someplace, you know, maybe he'll uncover the Kennedy files, you know. It could be interesting where you put, you know, RFK Jr. And I think the interesting thing is RFK Jr. is not afraid to ask hard questions. And I think that's what his brand kind of is he's a skeptic and he's a critic. And, you know, where will he, you know, play a role? Wherever it will be, you know, it'll be interesting. I think that's probably the most interesting, you know, potential, call it cabinet role or person that, you know, Trump will probably most certainly, you know, have somewhere in his administration if he is the victor. So big if, because like we said, everything's so close, it could be a coin toss. And then interestingly, I heard a newscast recently, well, you may not know the answer for several days or even a week, you know, when they start hand counting absentee ballots and mail-in ballots and things like that, it could take several days. We'll see what happens.
Well, that seems like an opportune moment to bring this podcast to a close. I'd like to thank Todd and Henry for sharing their insights today. And on behalf of us all, thank you to our audience for listening in. Please check the show notes for further reference, and for more coverage of these topics, go to the Regulatory Intelligence homepage. Thanks, Henry. Thanks, Todd. Goodbye.
Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.